Mishnah. We're holding up the Mishnah on Yudalev and Medalev. Mishamar Emim, Tavim and Yudoichin and Modich Shalait, spices, if you're grinding them on Yomtev, you have to use a wooden, you have to use a wooden mortar. Normally you use a stone one or a metal one or whatever. So you need a little bit of machinery, but not a serious one. Now Melach, if you're grinding up salt, but Pach over Eitzaporu, you need to use an earthenware pitcher and a wooden spoon, like a wooden spoon they use to stir pot. I mean, you need a big shidui over there. Why? Because we'll talk about what the difference between spices and salt is. Basil says no. Spices you can grind the normal way in a stone mortar. Salt, it's true. They agree you do need a shinui, but it only needs to be a small shinui. You do it in a wooden mortar instead of a stone one. So the bottom line is everybody agrees that with salt you need some kind of shinui. But Shama says you need a big shinui. Basil says a smaller one. My timer, what's the difference? Rav Huna and Rav Chista, Chad Amar, between Rav Huna and Rav Chista, one of them says, Kol HaKederes Kulon Tzrichus Melach, all parts of food need salt. They ain't Kol HaKederes Tzrichus Tavlin, but not all of them need spices. So meaning, before Yom Tov already, you knew you were going to need salt. You should have made sure to grind it up then. Whereas spices, you didn't necessarily know yesterday. You didn't necessarily know Erev Yom Tov what you're planning to make, what kind of food you're planning to make, and therefore what spices you'll need. Not necessarily. I mean, even nowadays, you know, some people, you know, my wife, for example, yeah, always makes a detailed menu before Yom Tov, but sometimes not. You know, sometimes people just whatever they happen to be in the mood for that day. You know. Yeah. Tosfos, by the way, discusses that there is a difference between different kinds of salt. There's this is brought in Shulchan Aruch as well. There's salt, for example, you know, there's salt which to begin with comes in blocks or in coarse pieces like kosher salt or whatever. That's one thing. And then there's a different thing where you have salt that was originally, you know, that was originally fine and then got clumped together where you need to pound it in order to break it apart. That kind is less of a problem because it was already broken apart once. The rule ain terchen acha terchen, that the malacha of terchen doesn't apply to something that was already bound up and then got stuck back together. But so here we're talking about something like kosher salt or something like that. Anyway, so that's one. And the other opinion is kol atavlin mefigin taiman, all other spices will lose their taste. They've got volatile chemicals in them. So if you grind them out of Yom Tov, they're going to lose some of their flavor. Well, melach and a figure timer, where salt does not lose its flavor if you grind it up the day before. And once it might be now, what's the practical difference? Either way, it comes out as the difference between spice and salt. It could be now the yoda. One difference would be, yeah, if you did make your plan and if you did make the yoda mice there, boil them, surely. One would be, yeah, if you know in advance what you're planning to cook, then yes, maybe you shouldn't be allowed to grind the spices on Yom Tov because you already knew before Yom Tov what spices you're going to need, according to the first opinion, whereas according to the second opinion, that doesn't matter. The fact is, if you ground them yesterday, they wouldn't have as much flavor today. Inami, or another possibility, gemurika, that one kind of spice where it doesn't make a difference is saffron. Saffron they just use for color. They use it to put a yellow color in food. They use it like in Indian cooking and whatever. It's basically just meant for the color. It doesn't really have a flavor.
So like the modern dyes?
That would be an example. Well, food dyes don't have to be ground up. Oh, yeah, it's right. But to the point.
If you were to use a herb or so for a dye like that.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose that would be, yeah. So the point is, again, according to the first opinion, there's no reason you couldn't have ground it before Yom Tov. Even if you didn't know you were going to use it on Yom Tov, fine, you could have ground it Erev Yom Tov and it wouldn't hurt anything. It's not going to lose its flavor because it doesn't have any. Whereas according to the second opinion, according to the first opinion, then fine, you didn't know yesterday you're going to need saffron, so therefore you should be allowed to grind it on Yom Tov. Whereas according to the second opinion, it's only a matter of taste. Saffron doesn't have a taste anyway. You should have ground it out of Yom Tov. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, anything that has to be ground, anything that has to be ground up, like spices, can be ground in the usual way. Afilu melach, and even salt. I said, what do you mean even salt? Well, I'm at melach bar yishinui. You just said in the Mishnah that both points of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, salt needs some kind of shinui. So what do you mean kedavkan? Just to point out, by the way, Tosfos mentions that because we have these two possibilities, we're according the two possibilities as far as spices, where one is, you know, whether you knew you needed them before Yom Tov or not, and whether they're going to lose their flavor or not. So Tosfos says better to be machmir both ways. Don't grind any spices on Yom Tov in the normal way. If you're going to grind them, do it in an unusual way. This is brought in Shulchan Aruch as a Chumrah. If you grind, so there are some kinds of things. For example, Tosfos also mentions that you can't use a pepper mill on Yom Tov. We'll talk about that at the end of the second parak. You know, those big pepper grinders that they use in restaurants. Yeah. So you can't use those. That everybody agrees to. If you're going to grind, if you need to grind up peppers, you have to do it with a mortar and pestle or something like that. But as far as other spices, technically you could do them in the normal way, but better you should be machmir, like turn the, as Gemara is going to say soon, turn the mortar on its side, for example, and do them that way. Anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying that anything that has to be ground, you can grind in the normal way, even salt. Well, I says, well, I'm at Melach Boya Shinri, but you just said that salt needs some kind of Shinri, even according to Beis Hillel. The answer is Huda Amaki Hai Tana. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is saying according to the following Tana, the Tanya, Amar Rab Meir, L'nechleku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel ala nidoichen shin nidoichen kedavken u'melach imahem, that Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel agree about other kinds of things, Rab Meir is saying, that have to be ground, various kinds of spices, that they can be ground normally, and you can grind salt with them, meaning you can put salt into the mortar together with them and grind them all together. L'nechleku el ducha b'fnei the machlokes, that's according to Rab Meir, is only about grinding salt by itself. Says, first of all, you can only use salt using a pitcher and a wooden spoon. And second of all, you can only do a small amount of it at a time, like the amount you would use for when you're roasting meat. We learned the other day, Rashi had implied that you always need salt meat even when you're roasting it to help get the blood out. And this is in fact the halacha. Tosfos says, not necessarily, but just as a practical matter, people salt it for flavor. Whatever it is, though, it's not a lot of salt. Ava lo l'sdera, but not the quantity of salt that you would need to put into a cooked dish. To salt meat when you're going to be cooking it. When you're salting meat, you're going to be cooking it. But to salt it to kasher it, you need a huge amount of salt. That the Shammai is saying you can't grind up salt for that. You can't grind up that quantity of salt on Yom Tov. No, that's what we're saying. So it would have to be lekli, only the kind of amount of salt that you'd use, that you use for putting on roast on meat where you're going to be roasting. But if you're going to be using the amount of salt that you need for kashering meat, Beis Shammai is saying you have to have it prepared from before Yom Tov. And again, looking at what Tosfos is saying, we're not talking about you had salt that was ready before Yom Tov and it got wet and it got clumped together. We're talking about l'chatchila that you buy a block of salt or you buy very coarse salt, like rock salt or whatever, and now you need to grind it finer to use it for kashering.
And this is like for a portion for proportion, you use that amount of salt. You don't just go, cooking a whole cow, so I'm going to be able to use the whole amount for that. Is that right?
Good question. I mean, Beis Shammai doesn't seem to be distinguishing between the amount of meat you're planning to prepare. But evidently, the idea is that you're right. It would be proportional to the amount of meat. Yeah, if you're going to be cooking a whole side of beef, you're going to need more salt than if you're just doing one joint. Okay, but it's still a small amount of salt relative to the meat. Well, Beis Hillel, I'm a b'chol davar, and Beis Hillel says you're allowed to grind with everything. What do you mean, b'chol davar? What do you mean you're allowed to grind? You're allowed to grind with anything. Are you even allowed to use a keli that would normally be mukta on Shabbos or Yom Tov? Ella aim a lichol davar. No, what Beis Hillel means is that you're allowed to grind salt for any purpose. So you're even allowed to grind it when you need it just in order to when you need it to kasher the meat to cook in a pot, meaning a larger quantity of salt. which Rashi explains. The point is, therefore, that we see that according to that, in other words, that the Beit Hillel would be saying that salt is just like that salt is just like any other spices. Just like any other spices, or Meir had established in the beginning of the Braita, that even Beit Shammai agrees you can grind them normally. So also, when Beit Hillel is saying that you can grind salt for any purpose, it also implies that you can grind it in the normal way. You don't need to make any difference.
What
is he saying? Well, enough that you'd need to cook meat in a pot, which is a substantial amount of salt, because you need to cash for the meat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So
according to the mayor, it comes out that Beit Hillel is allowing you to grind everything, both spices and salt, in the normal way. And so Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel that's how it is. That's where he gets the kol nidochin nidochin kedakin v'apil melach, that everything that can be ground, you can grind, everything that has to be ground, you can grind normally even salt, because we see by implication from this braisa that a mayor is saying Beit Hillel says that you can do that. However, Amalei Rav Acha Bar Dela Levrei, Rav Acha Bar Dela says to his son, Ki daichas, when you have to grind salt on Yom Tov, Asli Apluye, you should turn the mortar on its side, and then do the grinding. So you're not making a total shinui. It's true, Shmuel said that you can use a normal stone mortar, not like the Mishnah said you have to use a wooden one, but at least make some kind of shinui by turning it on the side. Incidentally, in Chassidus, it points out that the Aramaic word for davening is tzloisa. Sali, we use in the Gemara, sali, tzloisa, or whatever. So in Chassidus, there's someplace, I think, in the Kuntzei Torah, it talks about the idea that that's also related to our word atzluya, meaning to turn something on its side, because that's the idea of davening, is to turn over the one idea of davening is to turn over the Eibush Dezratin,
yeah,
and then create a new one. Anyway, so atzluya v'doich, and then grind with that. So the Gemara says, Rav Sheshes also held by the Chumrah, that if you're grinding salt on Yom Tov, you need to turn the mortar on the side. So one time, Shama Kol Buchna, he heard the sound of a grinder, of a mortar hitting a pestle, hitting a mortar. You know, you put the stuff into the mortar, and then you take this pestle and you go, you know, bang, bang, bang. So he hears this loud banging. Omar, he said, Hai lav megabe de besayhu. I know for a fact that this is not from inside my house, because I told the people in my family that if they're going to grind salt on Yom Tov, they have to do it with a shinui. And therefore, I can guarantee that sound is not coming from my house. Other people, fine, they don't hold by the Chumrah, so they might be doing it. Why? How did Rav Sheshes know? Especially Rav Sheshes was blind. Maybe the mortar was turned on its side, so they are doing it more or less the normal way. So how does he know for a fact that this isn't in his household? The answer is the shamid to have a solo color. He heard that the sound was very clear. When you have the mortar sitting in the normal way on its bottom, and then you're doing the pestle in and out of it like that, the banging has a very sharp ring to it. The wood or whatever it is, striking stone, whatever it is. It's easier to do, yeah. When you turn it on its side, the sound sounds a little like a little duller. So here he heard it a very clear ring, so therefore he knew the mortar must be on its bottom. If it must be on its bottom, if it's on its bottom, that can't be. The people in his family aren't doing that because he told them not to. Still, how do you know? Maybe they were grinding up spices. And we said that spices, you don't even have to do that. The answer is tavlin nabuchi manbach kalayu, because spices make a different sound when they're being ground. Because the seeds and the leaves and whatnot have to be crushed, unlike with salt, therefore you hear manbach nabuchi literally means like barking. Like you hear you don't hear just a ring like when you're doing it. You hear like it's muffled a little bit by the spices that you're grinding. So it doesn't sound quite so sharp. So when he heard this sharp sound of a pestle hitting a mortar, he knew it has to be grinding salt, and he knew it has to be its ground using with the mortar right side up.
Sheshes was blind from birth.
I don't know if a birth necessarily, but he was blind.
It makes more sense that in this case that he was blind from birth, that's more praise him because he would have been able to come to understand what it is.
Want to recognize the different sounds?
Yeah.
No, not necessarily. Even people who become blind later in life might be able to.
No. I was thinking that would be easier to do than if you were born blind, because then how would you know, oh, this sounds like that? You would have to go...
You have your own experience. I'm sure Rav Shesha sometimes ground up salt and spices himself.
Sure.
Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a brisa, speaking of using a mortar and a pestle, Ein oisin tisni, you're not allowed to make tisni on Yom Tov. Tisni is where you take wheat kernels and put them in a mortar and grind and crack them so that each grain gets divided into four pieces. And then you use it like a styrofoam or something. You're not allowed to do that on Yom Tov because there's a lot of tucha involved. A lot of hard work. And the eight koshin b'machteshes, and you're not allowed to grind up using a grinder, using a mortar. What's it? Pouty? What are these two statements? One seems to kind of contradict the other. First, you're saying you can't make tisni, which is only where the grain is divided into four, which would imply. But if you're using a mortar to break up the grain into larger pieces, for example, chilka, where each one is divided into only half, then that would be fine. There's different degrees of grinding that you can do with wheat like that. You can do a little bit. You can do it moderately where each one gets broken into half, or a little harder where they get divided into thirds or quarters or fifths, etc. So first we're saying enosisti that you're not allowed to do the quarters, which implies that you'd be allowed to do halves or thirds. And then you say you can't use a mortar at all, which means even to make the half one or whatever. The answer is hachikama. What the braita means is matam en os tisni. Why is it you're not allowed to make tisni on Yom Tov? Lefisha en koshin mamachteshes. Because you're not allowed to use a mortar. Therefore, necessarily you can't make tisni. It says v'leima en koshin mamachteshes. So then just say flat out you can't grind using a mortar automatically. You know you can't make tisni because how else are you going to make tisni? The answer is itani en koshin mamachteshes. True, but if it didn't mention anything about the tisni, it only mentioned that you can't grind using a mortar. Yeah, I figured people might have forgotten. It's unusual. That's why I sent out the reminder. Itani en koshin machteshes. If the braita had only said that you're not allowed to grind using a mortar, haba mina, then I would have thought hani mina machteshes gdoila. That's only with a large mortar you're not allowed to use on Yom Tov. Av machteshes kana ema shapu dami. But you would think maybe with a small mortar, maybe that would be enough of a shinui, and you'd be allowed. Kamash malon, that's why the braita has to tell us both. By telling us first, ein oisin tisni, which implies even a small mortar, and then continuing, ein koshin machteshes, which ein oisin tisni. You can't make tisni, which would be in a large mortar. Because that's usually what you use for making tisni. Then when it continues, you can't use a mortar. Then it means not even a small one. Even though a small one is usually usable on Yom Tov for spices, but nevertheless you're not allowed to use it for any other purpose other than spices on Yom Tov. You want to ask Valtanya in Koshin Machteshes Dolav or Koshin Machteshes Tana? But we have another braisa that explicitly says you're not allowed to use a big mortar, but you're allowed to use a small one. You're right, actually. The previous braisa, when we said about the tisni and about the machteshes, you're right. We have to retract what we said before. It's not the braisa is trying to tell us both a small one and a large one. It's telling us only a large one. So it is the two facts that the previous braisa is stating is like this. Number one, you're not allowed to make tisni. Whether you're making it in a big one or a small one, because making tisni is a very burdensome and a very hard thing to crack each grain into four pieces. So that you're not allowed to do no matter what the size of the machteshes. Anything else, if you're going to be making any other kind of thing in a mortar, then you can't use a large one. You can only use a small one, the kind that you normally use for spices. Machteshes go lasagna. On the other hand, Rava Omar, Rava says, loikasha, there's a different way of reconciling the two braisas, where one is saying you can't use only a big mortar, and the other one seems to be implying you can't use even a small one. Halon v'halahu. One is talking for us in Babel, the other one for them in Eretz Yisrael. So what's the difference? Rashi says the difference is like this. In Eretz Yisrael, people commonly had servants. Servants tend to be very careless with this kind of thing. You tell them that a certain thing is also on Yom Tov and a certain thing is Mutter, they're going to get careless and do the one that's also as well. So therefore, the first braisa that implied that both a small mortar and a large one you can't use on Yom Tov is talking about an Eretz Yisrael. We don't want to allow any loopholes for servants to exploit there. Whereas in Babel, people were poorer, they didn't tend to have servants, so therefore, you can go ahead and use a small one. That's one. The Rambam has a different explanation. The Rambam says in Eretz Yisrael, the wheat was better quality. If you make tisni in Eretz Yisrael on Erev Yom Tov, it'll still be just as good on Yom Tov itself. Whereas in Babel, not. So therefore, in Babel, they allowed you at least to use a small mortar. Not tisni, actually. They said you can't make tisni anyway because it's too good, it's too hard to make. But other kinds of cracked wheat on in Eretz Yisrael, if you prepare them before Yom Tov, then they'll still be able to eat. They'll still be edible. They'll still be just as fresh on Yom Tov. Whereas in Babel, the wheat was poorer quality, so you can't. Then the Ravid has a different explanation. In Babel, they used to eat a lot more cracked wheat than in Eretz Yisrael. We'll learn in a few days. Like Gemara is going to mention on Daf Zayin that the Bnei Babel is a very common thing. They would eat bread by their meal, as everybody did. But then, along with the bread as a side dish, they would eat daisa, which is these kinds of wheat kernels, these kind of broken wheat kernels, like farfel or something. The Gemara, in fact, says that the Gemara, in fact, makes fun of them for it. Like, you know, isn't that ridiculous? You're eating bread with a side dish of more bread. So therefore, in Babel, where it was a major part of their diet to eat this daisa, then the Chachamim allowed them to be able to make it somehow on Yom Tov. Where it's not such an important part of the diet, so therefore you don't do it at all. And then the Radvaz has one more explanation. The Radvaz says that in Babel they people didn't usually make their cracked wheat themselves. They'd have it done on an industrial scale. So therefore, fine, you can't have it done on an industrial scale using a large mortar. You can't go to the professionals and have them use a large mortar, but you can make privately in your house if you're going to make a little bit for yourself for Yom Tov, you're allowed to. Whereas in Eretz Yisrael, that was the normal way of doing things anyways. Everybody did it in their own house. So therefore, we want to make it different on Yom Tov, and therefore you can't do it at all. Gemara says a case, Rapapi Iklo de Mar Shmuel. Rapapi one time visited the house of Mar Shmuel. This Mar Shmuel, this isn't the Amora Shmuel, this is somebody else. Isolate Daisa, Velayachal. They brought him Daisa, again, this kind of quack wheat, like fireful, and he didn't eat him. Because he figured they had made it on Yom Tov illegally. Why? Maybe, how did he know? Maybe they made it in a small mortar, and we said that according to Abaya, at least, you're allowed to use that. According to Abaya, at least everybody agrees you're allowed to use a small mortar. The answer is the Chazi had to have a dayak tfei. Yeah, but he saw that it was very finely ground, which means you can't do that in a small mortar. You need the extra oomph that you get from a big one to be able to crack it so finely. So therefore, he realized it must have been made in a big one. Okay, but how did he know that? How did he know? Maybe they prepared it the day before. Then it might, it wouldn't be a problem.
Right.
Yeah, he didn't see them making it. If he saw they were making it, obviously, yeah. But no, we're talking about he didn't see them making it. But he figured out himself that it was made on Yom Tov. So how? The answer is the Chazid to have a kolif tzarei. He saw that the appearance of the wheat, it looked very peeled and fresh. You know, if it was made the day before, it would have started to like turn brown already a little bit, like this, where it looked very clean and white. Then obviously it was prepared today. And since, like we just said, it was also ground very finely, meant it was done on a big mortar, then it was done in violation of the dinim of Yom Tov, because we said that everybody agreed you're not allowed to use a big mortar for wheat on Yom Tov. The Ibai Seim, or the Gemara says, another possibility, you could say why Rav Papi didn't eat it, Shiny Bei Mar Shmuel, it's different in the house of Mar Shmuel, the Ikapri Tzusa Da'avi, because again, you have Avadim, who are careless about things, so therefore he knew, because there's so many Avadim around there, there's a very high likelihood that it was made illegally on Yom Tov. So therefore, forgetting about even, he didn't even have to look at how finely it was made or what the color of it was, he could assume that very likely they made it on Yom Tov when they weren't supposed to, and therefore he didn't eat it. Next Mishnah says, Haberta kitnius be Yom Tov. If somebody is picking out kitnius on Yom Tov, so he's eating beans and he needs to, and he's picking out, and he's picking out either the beans or the psoilus, or the shells and whatnot. The shama, I mean, The Shammai says you can pick a little bit at a time and then you eat it. You pick the dirt and whatever off one and then you eat it and then another one, etc. Or Basilah, I mean Baruch Kadar, but Basilah says you can do the Baruch in the normal way on Yom Tov, Bechekai in your lap. You put it in the lap of your clothes and then shake it around. But Kanoin, using a Kanoin, which we said the Gemara had said yesterday, Rashi had defined that a Kanoin is a utensil that looks sort of like a tennis racket with a hollow handle. So you have a large flat plate and attached to it is a tube. So what you do is you put the mixture of beans and shells and whatnot in the plate. You shake it gently. The beans are heavier, so they fall out through the tube, and the psoilus stays on top. So you're allowed to do that on Yom Tov, basically saying, or over Tamchui, you're using a large plate. Same idea. You do it like sort of like gold panning. You put the whole mixture in there and shake it gently to distribute the beans to one side and the psoilus to the other. Have a loiba tabla, but not using a board, because that you usually use a board used for only very large quantities, and that would be also on Yom Tov, because it makes it look like you're preparing for after Yom Tov. Veloiba nafa, veloiba kvara, and not using a sieve or a strainer. Rabban Gamliel, loima achmed yefa shayla. Rabban Gamliel says you also, another thing you can do to clean out the soilus from these beans, you can pour water over them. You can put them in a bucket of water and then skim off the junk that rises to the top. Tanya, when is this talking about that the Mishnah is saying that Basil is saying that you can actually take out the psoilus and throw it away? When you have more food than psoilus. But if you have more psoilus than food, and everybody agrees that you just have to take the food and leave the psoilus behind.
You can only do it that way.
Why does anybody even allow such a thing? I mean, if you have more psoilus than food, then effectively the whole thing is considered psoilus. All of it would be mukta. The answer is loitzricha, the nafish v'tircha v'zutta v'shi'ura. We're talking about that there's more tircha involved, but the volume of it is less. Meaning that you can have, for example, you know, imagine that the psoilus has a greater volume, the psoilus is less in volume than the oichel. The oichel consists of more than the psoilus, but there's much more of a hassle in taking out the psoilus because it's all little pieces, for example. So that's what we're saying. In other words, then fine, you're allowed to eat it on Yom Tov because you have more food than psoilus. But nevertheless, we're saying that in that case, take out the food and leave the psoilus behind. There's a number of Rishonim who have a different girsa in the Gemara over here, according to which it comes out that it basically depends on which is the greater tircha on Yom Tov. Are we talking about something where the greater tircha is to take out the psoilus and leave the food behind? Or the other way around, is it a greater tircha to take out the food and leave the psoilus? Either one, whichever is less tircha, it doesn't matter on volume according to that. It just depends on tircha. It just depends on how bothersome it is to take out which one you're taking out from the other. Whichever one is less tircha is what you should do on Yom Tov. So if taking out the food and leaving the junk behind is easier, then do that. And if taking out the junk and leaving the food behind is easier, then do that. We're talking on Yom Tov, obviously. Shabbos is different.
You've been around Borah, but you have to just go the easier one.
Right. We're saying, because Borah is a malacha seichel nefesh. It's a malacha that's needed for food preparation. So right, we were talking about for food, yeah.
No.
And that's the halacha that's brought in Shulchan Aruch, is that you do the whichever one is easier. The Mishnah said, "Rav Gamliel, I'm af mediach b'shoyla." That Rav Gamliel had said, "You can also pour water on it and then skim off the garbage." Tanya, Amar Rav Elazar ber Tzadik, Kachayim in Hagen Shabbos Rav Gamliel. This was the custom of the family of Rav Gamliel. Shoyim avid li mole adashim. They would bring a pail full of, for example, lentils. Thank you. Umetzif and olive mayim, and then they'd pour water over it. Until it covers the lentils. And then that way the food, the lentils are on bottom of the pail, and the shells and whatnot they float to the top. We learn in a different braita that it was the other way around, that lentils would be on top, the garbage would be on bottom. The answer is like Kasha Haba Afra Haba Gili. The two braita are talking about two different kinds of junk that might be mixed in with the lentils. One is dirt, which would fall to the bottom. And the other is shells or shells and straw, which would float to the top. So you'd have, in other words, you'd have a dirt at the bottom of the pail. You'd have the lentils would be somewhere below the surface, but not all the way sinking to the bottom. And the shells would be on top. So therefore, you'd skim off the shells from the top, you'd take off the lentils, and then you'd pour out the rest of the water with the dirt in it. So Rambam Gamliel is saying you can do that. That's not the halacha, though. Mishnah says, "Veshamer imim ein mishalchem biyamtiv elamonai." On yamtiv, you're only allowed to send.
Are
if you
saying that the Mishnah is not that way?
The Rambam Gamliel mentioned this in the Mishnah, but the halacha is not like Rambam Gamliel. The halacha is only like Beis Hillel, that you can do borer in the usual, we said the usual way, in your lap or using a kanon or a pamchoy. But whatever it is, you have to pick out the final halacha is you have to pick out the oichol mitoch psolos or psolos mitoch oichol, whichever one is easier. Apparently, the idea is that doing it Rambam Gamliel's way, with pouring water over it and then skimming it off, is considered too much of a tircha. Mishnah says, "V'shamer omim en v'shalchan v'yamtiv ela monos." On yamtiv, if you want to send a present to somebody else, you can only send them monos. And we know monos, like mishloach monos, it means it has to be ready to eat food. That's what it means over here also. It means it has to be something that the person, the recipient, would actually be able to eat today. It can't be something that would usually be meant for leaving over for tomorrow. Or Basilil, I remember Basilil says no. Mashachin behema chayev oif. You're allowed to send domestic animals or wild animals or birds, ben chayin ben shchutin, whether they're alive or whether they're already shechted. Similarly, mashachin yenis shmonim or slothis fkitnius. You're allowed to send somebody on yomtiv a present, wine or oil or fine flour or beans, avaloitvua, but not grain. Because grain, what are you going to do with it on yomtiv? You can't grind it on yomtiv. Grinding is one of the malachas you're not allowed because you should have done it yesterday. We established before that you're not allowed to make tisni or any of these kinds of things on Yom Tov. Tisni was wheat cracked into four pieces, which was a common way of eating. They'd make it into falafel or something like that. But Rav Shimon matzah b'tavur. But Rav Shimon says you are allowed to send somebody raw tavur because the person can always just Rashi brings two possibilities. He can cook it as whole grain, or he can grind them using a small mortar. And we said before that a small mortar is allowed. Which then, the Slach and a couple of other Mephoshim ask, what do you mean? We established before that in Eretz Yisrael, you're not even allowed to use a small mortar because of the various reasons that we brought. So how is Rashi talking about that you'd be allowed to grind them in a small mortar? So one possibility, the one possibility might indeed be that Reb Shimon is speaking to Bnei Bavel, that Reb Shimon, even though he himself lived in Eretz Yisrael, is speaking to people in Bavel. You, Bnei Bavel, you are allowed to use a small mortar on Yom Tov, so therefore, you'd be allowed to send each other raw wheat. The Chassam Sofer has a different explanation that basically when we were saying before you're not allowed to use a small mortar in Eretz Yisrael is because you yourself could have done it before Yom Tov. Why should he be doing it on Yom Tov? Here you're sending somebody a gift. He didn't know before Yom Tov he's going to be receiving it. So according to Reb Shimon, yes, maybe you'd be allowed to use a small mortar in that case. Sigmar says, Tani Rabbi Chiel, this that we're saying that you're allowed to send somebody a present, Rabbi Chiel says, Uvad shalo yasen v'shura. As long as you do not send it with a line of people. Because when you're sending it with a line of people, which we'll see in the Gemara in a second how many that is, then it makes it look, it doesn't look like it's a present anymore. It makes it look like you're going, like they're taking stuff to market. Tana, we learn in a braisa, Ein shura p'chusim ishloisha b'nei adam. A shura means not less than three people. So if you have three people carrying your present, then that's not allowed on Yom Tov. There's another one of the other Mephoshim explains that why that's with three people is because then three people, it makes it look like you have a business transaction going on over here, one buying, one selling, and one being the go-between. So that's the next thing. Boy Ravashi, Ravashi asks, Tlosa Gabriel, Tlosa Mini, Mai. What if you have three different people, each one carrying a different myth? Is that allowed? Because each min is only each type of thing. You have to imagine three people. One of them is carrying meat. One is carrying wine. And one is carrying bread. Let's say, so each thing is only being taken by one person. But after all, you have three people all together. And the answer is take. We have to leave it standing. We don't know. So therefore, in practice, don't do that. The Mishnah said Reb Shimon Matzah B'Tavur, that Reb Shimon says you're allowed to send raw grain on Yom Tov. Tanya, we learn in a braise, Rav Shimon matzah b'tvur, Rav Shimon allows you to send grain. Kugon chitin lasas man ludiyos. For example, you can send wheat, which then the person, the recipient, can use it to make ludiyos. Ludiyos, Rashi just says, is some kind of dish made out of grain. The Aruch defines it as something sort of like trail mix. That they take the grain and mix it together with, I think he says, pomegranate seeds and nuts and whatever. So you'd be able to do that. Or, for example, you could send him raw barley because he can use it for animal food. And Adoshim, Lasas Man Resistin. Similarly, you could send him raw lentils because he can make resistin out of them, again, as some kind of food made out of lentils. That's the thing. So that gets into the question when Rashi was saying before about using a small mortar. If you say that Ludios involves grinding the wheat, then you're back to the question, right? We said before you can't use even a small mortar in Eretz Yisrael, so how is he saying that you're allowed to? And that was the different possibilities that we just mentioned. Either that he's talking to Bnei Bavel, or that the din is directed towards Bnei Bavel, or that even in Eretz Yisrael, since you didn't know in advance you're going to be getting it, then you'd be allowed to. The other possibility that Flach mentions is very simple, that maybe not, like Rashi says. Maybe in fact Ludios consists of whole grains of wheat. The dish is made out of whole grains of wheat, and according to Aruch, mixed with all this other stuff, whatever. So therefore it wouldn't be an issue. Mishnah says, Meshalchen Kevim, you're allowed to send somebody clothes on Yom Tov. The previous Mishnah talked about food. Now we're talking about clothes. Bein tefurin, bein she'en and tefurin, whether they're already sewn together or whether not, whether they're just still the individual pieces of cloth. Afafi she'esh ben kilayim, even if there is kilayim, even if the shatna is in them, we'll talk about in the Gemara what you can do with them. Vehem l'tzarech hamoed, as long as there is a purpose in them for Yom Tov. No, we're talking about on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, you can take, for example, you're sewing a suit, and you haven't sewn together the pieces yet, but you're allowed to send him the pieces. And even if they're shatnez, avaloy sandal amasumer, but you're not allowed to send him a hobnailed sandal, a sandal that has nails sticking out on the bottom of it. The Gemara will tell us tomorrow why. That we learned about in Shabbos. That technically it was only also to wear it on Shabbos and Yom Tov. Because Ma'aseh Shehaya, we'll learn tomorrow, a case that happened where it caused a tragedy. Actually, the Yerushalmi does have an interesting expression about it, but technically the Chachamim would have wanted to ask them on weekdays as well, but they figured if they asked her to wear such sandals on weekdays as well, nobody's going to pay attention to that, because it was a normal article of footwear. What the Chachamim did, though, is they kind of played a trick. Normally, in those times, people used the same shoes for Shabbos and weekday. They didn't have special Shabbos shoes like we do.
Right.
So automatically, then, if you ask them to wear these shoes on Shabbos, they're not going to end up wearing them on weekdays either, because people don't have two pairs of shoes. So therefore, they accomplished what they wanted to indirectly, kind of.
Just asking them on
Shabbos and Yom Tov, yeah. So you can't send a sandal on a sumo, because there's no purpose for it on Shabbos or on Yom Tov. You also can't send a shoe that's not sewn together yet, because again, an unsewn shoe you can't do anything with. You can't wear it. You can't use the pieces for anything. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Achlet Minol Lavan. Rabbi Yehuda says also you can't send somebody on Yom Tov a white shoe. Because it needs a professional. It needs to be dyed. In those days, nobody wore undyed shoes. An interesting side thing on this, by the way, an interesting relevance of this halacha to a completely different thing is in the dinim of chalitza. When it comes to chalitza, you know, the yavam puts on a shoe and the yavama takes it off him. That shoe, there's some very exact criteria how it has to be made, and one of them is, and Amar points out in Shulchan Aruch, that the shoe should be black. The only guy points out in the notes over there, and I go, that's based on our Mishnah, that only a black shoe is something that people would normally wear, otherwise it can't be considered a full-fledged shoe. Zach, while this is the general rule, anything that you can enjoy on Yom Tov, you can send it to somebody. And we'll see, tomorrow we'll say that actually that means there's even things that you can't use on Yom Tov, but the person still has benefit from the fact that he received it on Yom Tov. Tefillin, for example, the Gemara will say you don't wear tefillin on Yom Tov, but nevertheless you're allowed to send somebody a gift of tefillin on Yom Tov.
Yeah,
that's the thing we're saying as a gift. It's not muktzah.
Also, I don't.
says, okay, I can understand when you're sending clothes that are already sewn together. Sure, the person can wear them. Even if they're not sewn together, fine, I can understand. The person can still cover himself with the pieces. You can take like the sleeves of the jacket or something and use them as a makeshift covering. What are you going to do with shatnez? You might say, well, you can fold it up and put it underneath you. Sit on it as a cushion. But you can't. We learn in a braisa, when the pasuk says, lo yala alacha, that shatnez should not come up on you, means you are allowed to place shatnez underneath you. So you are allowed to sit on shatnez, for example. But the chacham said you're not allowed to do that. Because a thread of it might get folded over onto your skin. Rashi says specifically we're talking about over here about large threads. Imagine like you have a blanket that has these thick threads on the end of it, these thick fringes on the end of it. If a fringe of that actually comes onto your skin, it is actually helping keeping you warm, keeping you comfortable. And then you would actually be considered to be wearing shatnez, and that would be also. So because of that, the Chum made this gzera that you're not even allowed to sit, that you're not even allowed to sit on it. Other Rishonim, I think the Rambam explained a little differently that we're not even talking about a thick thread like that. Even a thin thread would be an issue. V'chitem and demasik midi beni beni. You can say, okay, so maybe what you do is you put the shatnez down and then you put something else on top of it and you sit on that. So at least you're having some use out of the shatnez. You're using it as the bottom part of the cushion. You can't. Such a long
chain of transmission. Mishum kahala kadisha de Yerushalayim, in the name of the holy congregation of Yerushalayim. Afilo esem matzoyes zu agabe zu. Even if you have 10 mats, one on top of the other, kilayim tachteim, and then there's kilayim, there's shatnez underneath them. Also lishan aleim, you're not allowed to sleep on them. Mishum shenem ala yalo alacha, because the pasuk says it's not allowed to come up on you. Yes, some of Farshim say that it does, that maybe one of them is talking Daraisa and one is Dirabanan, or that the other one is talking about where there's a possibility of threads and this one's talking about even where there's not. Ella Bavilon. So maybe you could say that we're talking about the person can use the shatnez on Yom Tov, they can hang it up as a door curtain. But you can't. Why did the Chachamim say that a curtain is mekabel tuma? A curtain on the face of it should be considered like a wall of a house. It shouldn't be mekabel tuma. Because the servant, the waiter, sometimes when he's standing around waiting on tables or whatever, he wraps himself in it to warm up a little bit. So therefore it can be mekabel tuma because it's used as a garment sometimes. And therefore it's mekabel tuma, and therefore also you're not allowed to make it out of kalayim. Tosfos seems to argue with that, because Tosfos says we never find throughout Shas that any concept that you're not allowed to make a curtain out of kalayim. Anyway, and what says Ella Bakashin. Rather you have to say that we're talking about when are you allowed to send shatnez clothes to somebody on Yom Tov when they're hard, when they're stiff. Because then they don't warm you up. V'chihadu amr Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yeshua, like Rav Huna b'rei Rav Yeshua said, hay namta gamda, the neresh, this shrunken felt of neresh, neresh is the name of a place, shaya is allowed. The felt was made out of shatnez, but it was shrunken, or actually Rashi says gamda means that it was hard. It was made very stiff. Namta is felt. Gamda means stiff. The neresh, from the name of the neresh, the name of the place, is shaya. You're allowed to sit on it because you don't get warm by sitting on really stiff felt like that. And we're not worried about a little bit of it curling over and touching your skin because again it's hard. A similar din. Amar Papa. Ardalin ein behem mishum kalayim. There's no issue of kalayim with. What are ardalim? Rashi says that they are basically they're basically overshoes. And in fact, in modern Hebrew, ardalim means galoshes, exactly like that, like overshoes. So what they did is the sole Rashi describes as being out of goat skin, and then the heel was made out of wool, or at least they put wool inside to make it comfortable to walk on. If they're made out of kalayim, if you have linen in there as well, along with the wool, then it would be mutter, because again they're hard. They're not meant for comfort. They're meant to keep your feet from getting wet, basically. Amar Rava, another din, haritzrori de pshiti, a cloth of kalayim that you use, a cloth that you use for holding money. Ein behem shem kalayim, then there's no issue of kalayim with it, because since you put money inside it, since you put coins inside it, it becomes very hard. Even though the cloth itself might be soft, once all the money is in there, it becomes stiff. So the same issue. Even if you put it on your lap, it's not really warming you up. So you don't have an issue of having hanaf and kalayim. However, the Rizani, a similar kind of bag that's used for holding seeds, yesh behem mishum kalayim. That kalayim does apply to it, because you can't put on your lap, because the seeds are not hard. So therefore, when you put it on your lap, you're enjoying the warmth of the kalayim. Rav Ashi, I'm echazeh v'echazeh in beshem mishum kalayim. Rav Ashi says, either way, there's no issue of kalayim, there's no issue of shatnin. Lafisha, and there's a chimam b'kach, because that's not the normal way of warming up. We're talking about, you're not allowed to wear shatnin, you're not allowed to use it as a blanket, or et cetera, we talked about before, not sitting on it, but to have a bag with shatnin, to have a shatnin bag on your lap, that's not a problem. And that's halacha.
Gouaches, that have shotness in them, you would be allowed?
So only if they're hard, we're saying. The galoshes that they wore in those times were very hard, were very hard and stiff.
Does that
have the shochet? Cool. Yeah, so there is, but the question is, how stiff is stiff? I mean, a regular item of clothing that we wear is not quite so stiff. You do enjoy the warmth of it. A suit, for example, you would have to be concerned about shatnez. What we'd be talking about is something like, for example, maybe a felt hat. But again, you know, not all the felt hats we use. You know, some of them are. Shatnez does apply to felt. There's a machlokas. Tosfos has a long discussion over here whether minatora you have to have that the whether minatora you have to have shua tov even nuz, whether it has to be that the material, the wool and linen, are felted together and then spun together and then woven together, or whether minatora even one of those is enough to make it kalayim. In any case, midrabanan even one of those. So felt is, there is an issue of kalayim or shatnez with felt. So we're only talking about if it's very hard. If it's hard like a board, we're just like, you know, a board is not considered clothed, even if it's not considered clothing, even if you use it as a windbreak. So also this, but you would have to determine how hard is hard. So yeah, this concept is brought in Shulchan Aruch, but how to apply it in practice is not so simple. No, because of the warmth. That's what we're saying. You can get other kinds of benefit from kalayim. You're allowed to sell shatnez clothes, for example. Even the Mishnah in Kalayim mentions that we learned it actually at one point, maybe in Erevin, that people who are selling clothes in those days, they'd actually model the clothes as they're selling them. Technically, they're allowed to wear the shatnez suit to model for their customers. But the tznui and the people who are more careful about these things instead would hold it on a hanger behind them. Not so that, because you're not wearing it for the purpose of wearing. You're wearing it for the purpose of modeling it for the customer. If the customer is a guy, it's not an issue.
Yeah. Do you happen to know any places around here that could possibly